हरि ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Continue, page 46, chapter 3, Liberation from the Illusory Energy. BBT purport states, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Lord's tendency to give himself to his pure devotee is demonstrated in the case of Bali Maharaj, who sacrificed his universal kingdom for the pleasure of Lord Vamanadeva. Lord Vamanadeva was so pleased by the selfless surrender of Bali Maharaj that the Lord became the doorman in the place of Bali, who was reinstated as a great leader in the universe. Yeah, we did.
Page 47.
47 now.
47? Okay, so I put it at the BBT purport just on the wrong page. Okay. Yeah, otherwise that means we didn't do anything. Okay. The BBT purport states, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Manovakaya Dandam, or strictly control of the mind, speech, and bodily activities, means Manasa Vichiksha Kaika Vikarma Rahityam. That is, one should rigidly abandon all sinful activities with his mind, speech, and body.
The sinful activity, they are connected mind, speech, and body.
Yeah, because in Upadeshamrita, it gives all those. Is that from the you have the pushings that they're in these categories. So what you eat, then that will go. That'll push on the stomach, which will then push on the genitals.
Yes.
And then what you speak, then that's going to go on the, I think, push on the mind, which then pushes on anger or something like this. So then these are the areas that, so when you say body, mind, and words, the words means the senses. Because what you speak is then it's what's going to be what your senses will do. Right? So then one has to control these three. That's the whole point of what sannyasa is.
Yes.
Is the control of these.
Yes.
So when Krishna is speaking in the Gita about there's renunciation, you know, and then there's sannyas.
Mm-hmm.
So that renunciation means you're doing things thinking it's yours, then giving the result to Krishna.
Yes.
Sannyas means you're doing it just for Krishna. That means doing it with the body, with the mind, and with the words.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same principle.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just everything's connected to Krishna. That's what you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
You're just taking the different angles. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that one cannot develop the godly qualities mentioned in the preceding verses unless one accepts the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide Vaishnava spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyayeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.21. In this connection, he has quoted the following statement. Archayitva tu Govindam tadiyan narchayet tu yaha. Nasa bhagavato gyeyas kevalam dambi kas smritaha. One who performs worship of Lord Govinda that fails to worship his devotees should be understood to be not a devotee of the Lord, but simply a victim of false pride. Because if we want to be a servant of the Lord, then that means you have to be servant of those who are His servants. Right? Because then if we're just serving the Lord directly and think that that's all that's necessary, then it means it's false pride because you can't actually do that. Everyone's relationship with the Lord comes through devotees. Right? So that means everyone's serving under. Right? So, you know, you're either serving under the gopis and under Mother Jashoda, under the head, you know, the cowherd boys headed by Sridham Sudham Subal, you know, the servants headed by Raktak and like this, Danishta, then like this. So, unless that's there, how do you approach Krishna? Because they're the devotees of Krishna. And we're the devotees of those devotees. So the principle is there. And so for Krishna, then they're His devotees, they're dear, and then those that are connected to them become dear also. So it's not that the farther you are down the parampara, then the farther away you are. For Krishna, there's no time and space, since He's everything, anything, way. Right? So it just makes it more and more interesting. Because you're adding something. Means they give the whole aspect, but then these bring in and give something special. Does that make sense? So it's like just say, okay, you have you know, you've made some nice preparation, you know, and plated it very well, looks very nice, colorful and bright and all that. Then you sprinkle some, you know, coriander or some parsley on top. So it just adds to what's there. It's the preparation that's the main point, but this just adds that little bit. Or that it's in a special kind of, you know, plate or bowl. You know, and then that's been put on a nice tablecloth, which is on a nice table that has a nice chair. There's a nice, you know, it just adds. But the whole thing's about the preparation. So the point is it's all about these devotees. It's about Mother Jashoda, about Radharani, like this. It's about that. But you can add something. That's what the devotee can do. You can add some special little something to that pastime in that situation. And that's the unlimited aspects that are there. So that's why, you know, there's each devotee has his own special, unique aspect. It means all those aspects are there in Radharani, or in Mother Jashoda, whatever is the field you're working in, they are the complete form of that kind of mood. Right? So they have all those qualities, can do all those things. But they're performing something and you add something to it, and it's the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Because it has to be the right one, otherwise it's rasa bas, right? What if I bring out some nice sweet, and then I sprinkle some nice, you know, leaves on top? No, it won't work. You know, like you sprinkle some pistachios on top, that'll work. But not leaves. You understand? So, not that the leaves aren't bona fide, they just have to go at a particular time. So that's the importance of understanding rasa, following the others, because they'll say what to do at what time. Mm-hmm. So that's why as the servant of the servant of the servant, like this, then we, whatever's our uniqueness, it will be applied at the perfect time to please Krishna. Right? And since so many qualities are there, then there's plenty to do. It's not that we only have one thing to do.
And it is unlimited.
Yeah, like that. Pastimes are unlimited, so that means there'll be unlimited opportunity for us to apply our specific aspect. Yes. Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So every jiva is vishesh in that sense?
Every jiva, yes. Otherwise, what's the point of one jiva and the next if they're all the same? Okay, if they're all clones, then, you know, what's the point? You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because then you know that they all... You know, okay, whatever they shoot at, they can't hit. And when they walk through doors, they always hit their head. So you just know that that's the way they all are. But the point is no, it's about the uniqueness of that individual. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna's unlimited. So therefore, the parts and parcels are also special. Not that we're unlimited, but our specific qualifications can fit into those unlimited pastimes, since it's all connected with Krishna. And it will be, you'll be in the correct pastimes. Right? You know, it's like we have to remember, Yoga Maya is not a bad manager. So it's not that you're going to end up someplace sitting here and like, oh, what am I doing here? You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, one of the cowherd boys ends up in Mother Jashoda's kitchen with everybody, you know, what am I doing here? You know, it's like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
You may be sent for testing.
That you'll just sit down when Krishna eats and eat at that time, then, you know, like that. So you'll test with Krishna. Now, what do you call it? Now, Madhu Mangal could walk in there.
Yes.
But other than that, then why would anybody be in there? So you understand? So it's a victim of false pride because you can't approach Krishna directly. So you're thinking, I'm such a great devotee, it's so wonderful and all that. It's simply false pride. Okay. Sri Prabhuda continued, one should hear, glorify, and meditate upon the wonderful transcendental activities of the Lord. One should specifically become absorbed in the appearance, activities, qualities, and holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus inspired, one should perform all of one's daily activities as an offering to the Lord. One should perform sacrifice, charity, and penance exclusively for the Lord's satisfaction. Right? So not for anyone else, not for pride or prestige, for economic development, for worshipping the demigods. No, it's just to please Krishna. Similarly, one should chant only those mantras which glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all one's religious activities should be performed as an offering to the Lord. Right? So you only learn mantras and that are glorifying the Lord. There's no need of anything else. Right? And all one's religious activities should be performed as an offering to the Lord. Whatever one finds pleasing or enjoyable, he should immediately offer to the Supreme Lord. And even his wife, children, home, and very life, air, should be offered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Footnote 18. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 25 to 28 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 16, entitled The Gradual Manifestation of Bhava, Bhavodaya Krama, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So that means these kind of activities where everything's always connected, that's what you're trying to do, that's the goal.
And to offer wife, children, home, and that means to engage everyone in Krishna service?
Yes, yes. It doesn't mean that you have an altar there and you put them on there and then not like that. No, you don't. Okay. In this regard, Sri Krishna instructs in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Srila Prabhupada comments, thus it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together, and Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live, therefore he should accept the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies, therefore Krishna recommends do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has the tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? So you're taking care of your needs. So when we're always talking about charity, you know, you're giving 50%, that means your standard expenses, that is all taken care of. Right? Whatever's your regular thing, your rent, your food, your, you know, clothes, your medicine, whatever's your standard expenses, because you know what your standard expenses. Then what's above that, that's then, okay, now I can buy this, I can buy that. But that's what then you're giving charity with. Right? Like that. So it's, does that make sense? It's important to understand. That's why he says surplus money. Surplus money means what's above what is required. Whatever is your position, You know, that's there. So whatever's left, even if what's left is 10 rupees, okay, then 5 rupees for charity, 5 rupees, now go out and, you know, have a good time. Buy one puchka. Srila Prabhupada continued, one who desires his ultimate self-interest should cultivate friendship with those persons who have accepted Krishna as the Lord of their life. One should further develop an attitude of service towards all living beings. One should, you know, so it's all living beings, not just certain ones, yes. Right? Because we see, neophyte will just be certain ones. Madhyama, then he'll distinguish the Uttama, then he sees that towards all living. Especially those who accept the principles of religious behavior. Right? So those who are there, then that's where some, that extra effort will be put. But others, you'll behave properly, you'll deal nicely. You know, service to the ants means not stepping on them, like that, you know, like that. Yeah. Among religious persons, one should especially render service to the pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should learn how to associate with the devotees of the Lord by gathering with them to chant the glories of the Lord. This process is most purifying. As devotees thus develop their loving relationship, loving friendship, they feel mutual happiness and satisfaction. And by thus encouraging one another, they are able to give up material sense gratification, which is the cause of all suffering. I mean, that's almost like exactly the same as the Gita shloka, right? Yeah. I think it's what's that? Tushanti cha ramanti cha. Yeah. The BBT purport states, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness should not envy one another or quarrel amongst themselves. Giving up all such mundane feelings, they should gather together and chant the glories of the Supreme Lord for mutual purification. Right, so these arguments over it means that there's something mundane about it. Otherwise, why is there an argument? Right? Like that. And of course, you know, your side is, your considerations are all purely spiritual. It's the other person who's bringing out the mundane. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out that glorification of the Supreme Lord is especially potent when performed in the association of pure devotees. When devotees engage in Sankirtana, chanting the glories of the Lord together, they experience the highest transcendental bliss and satisfaction. Thus, they encourage one another to give up material sense gratification, which is based on illicit sexual connections with women. One devotee will say to another, oh, you have given up sense gratification. Starting today, I shall also give it up. Yes. Right, so when they see the others, how they're nicely engaged, you become inspired. What sadhana they do, you are inspired by that. How they've given up the attachment to the world, then one is inspired by that. So that's the whole point, is if you're associating with those who are more advanced, then you become inspired. Right? One should learn to increase one's love for the devotees, to satisfy them, and to give up sense objects unfavorable to serving Krishna. And one should learn to view the entire universe as paraphernalia for the Lord's service. By engaging the objects of the senses in Krishna's service, one automatically becomes detached from them. Right? Because we're attached, we want to use for ourselves. We use it for Krishna. We get purified. We please Krishna. We get purified. We start losing that interest that it's for us. Right? And as one passes one's days in the association of the Lord's devotees, one's transcendental ecstasy increases more and more. Through discussions about the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, one who wants to be free from the harassment of Maya in the form of sense gratification must constantly associate with pure devotees of the Lord who have no engagement other than chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord and carrying out his mission on earth. And so they just see everything in connection with Krishna. So that ideally one associates with such devotees, or at least those aspiring to be on that platform. Srila Madhvacharya has pointed out that just as one should cultivate friendship with devotees, one must cultivate a spirit of friendship towards the demigods who manage the universe on the Lord's behalf. Thus one should live peacefully within this world. Right, so friends, you appreciate what they're doing. You don't have to worship them. Right? Just like friends, you don't have to worship friends. Right? You just respect, appreciate. So like that, they do. Does that make sense? Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, taking shelter of purifying discussions where there is glorification of the Lord, one will have mutual enjoyment without rivalry. Mita ratihi. One will have happiness arising from association with other devotees. Mutually, one will become detached from material enjoyment. From one's wife and other things unfavorable for devotional development. Oh, okay. That's okay. That's connected back here. Okay. One will have happiness arising from association with other devotees. Mutually, one will become detached from material enjoyment, from one's wife and other things unfavorable for devotional development. This means if you are becoming detached, I also will become detached starting from today. The disciple should learn all this. Right? So then, in the association, husband and wife, you know, friends, they sit in that, they're trying to become detached from the mundane considerations. So as one becomes, then the other one tries to become. Right? So relationship remains based on Krishna consciousness. The mundane aspects, that's what's given up. Does that make sense? So relationship remains as devotees. Like that. And duties are there, whatever is the appropriate duties.
There is inspiration between devotees at the same level at the time.
Yes. Yeah, because then it works very nicely. Because you see is that in the relationship, even here, husband and wife, then because the conjugal includes all the other rasas, then friendship is going to be the practical one where most of your activities are happening.
Yes.
Like that. Does that make sense? You do something for them, that's the service, you're appreciating the position. If there's some difficulty, you know, physical or emotional, that... Then you're taking care of doing some serious cooking. then you're taking care of this, the parental ras like this. So the friendship ras becomes the prominent one. That's where you plan, you do things together, you know, all those kind of aspects of just activities in life is based on friendship. So that's does that make sense? So that's the consideration. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, we already read that. Okay. Sri Prabhuta continued. The devotees of the Lord constantly discuss the glories of the personality of Godhead amongst themselves. Thus, they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of his qualities and pastimes. In this way, by their devotion to the principles of Bhakti Yoga, the devotees please the personality of Godhead, who takes away from them everything inauspicious. Being pure, yeah. So everything inauspicious, it may be some situation, it may be some activity, it may just be the mentality.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of whatever is the thing, because the activity may be good, the mentality is wrong. Right? When the mentality is right, the activity is wrong. So whatever it is that's inauspicious for devotional service, then Krishna will arrange that goes. But we have to, you know, be inspired that it goes. We want to be situated in this constant hearing and chanting about Krishna. Right?
Yes.
So, yeah, does that make sense? So we see here that uniqueness about, that is talking on this platform, but you see is as Paramahamsas here, and that they're known in that way. They're speaking on what is the actual goal you're trying to get to, and the processes for getting there. So this is what we should aspire for. As we saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur then put these aspects within the category of Prayojana. Okay. So we should be inspired by these things. Being purified of all impediments, the devotees awaken to pure love of Godhead. And thus, even within this world, their spiritualized bodies exhibit symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, such as standing of the bodily hairs on end. Footnote 19. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 30 and 31 Tubhagodarkar Michimala, chapter 11, entitled Analysis of the Process, Abhideya Vichar. This is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Okay, so that was, what did you say? 30-31. Where was 30? Okay, that was the end of here. So in other words, this always being together, discussing about the Lord, inspiring each other in devotional service, so that's the Abhideya process. Having achieved love of God, having achieved love of Godhead, the devotees sometimes cry out loud, absorbed in thought of the infallible Lord. Sometimes they laugh, feel great pleasure, speak out loud to the Lord, dance or sing. Such devotees having transcendental material conditioned life, having transcended material, what is transcendental material life? Having transcended material conditioned life, right? Yeah. So sometimes you're reading, you go along, you're like, what? Go back. Yeah, I remember once we were there, I think we were in Thailand. It was just myself and Panchadevita Maharaj. So, because he's the Maharaj, he gives the class. And I'm the person listening to the class. And so we're going, and he starts to fall asleep while he's talking. And keeping, you know, talking. And then he says something that's not quite, because he's fallen asleep. And he said something that didn't match the sentence. And then, as soon as it was said, then he woke up and was like, what? Who said that? You know, that's nonsense. You know, then they figured out what was going on. So sometimes you read and then, what? Yeah,
okay. Last year, it came about the ferocious devotees of the Lord.
The ferocious?
Yeah.
Instead of?
Some regular sentence was there. Some regular sentence was there. But the end word was skipped and it became the ferocious devotees of the Lord.
Okay.
Yeah.
Such devotees having transcended material conditioned life sometimes imitate the unborn Supreme Lord by acting out his pastimes. And sometimes, achieving his personal audience, they remain peaceful and silent. Footnote 20. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 32 to Bhagavad Arkamichimala, chapter 16, entitled The Gradual Manifestation of Bhava, Bhavodaya, Bhavodaya, Krama, which is in the Prayojana section of the book. So we see, he'll give this process and show them, that process will bring you to the stage of bhava, which will bring you to prema. Thus learning the science of devotional service and practically engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, the devotee comes to the stage of love of God. So you learn about it and you practice. And by complete devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, the devotee easily crosses over the illusory energy, Maya, which is extremely difficult to cross. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, one thus learns about performance of bhakti. This learning ends with the first part of verse 31. Following that, 31 to 32, there are teachings about the cherished goal, prema, in order to inspire the devotee to develop that stage, thinking, when will I develop symptoms of ecstasy? By prema bhakti, tad uttaya, arising from taught bhakti, sadhana, one will cross maya easily. But crossing maya is the secondary result, right? So getting over maya is not actually the real point. It's developing love for Krishna. Right? So we see is that he's talking about the practices that are there, and then that result of being absorbed in the Lord and that inspiration, or then developing all these transcendental symptoms of love of God. But he also mentioned the secondary aspects, but that's not the main thing. Like here, crossing over the material energy or giving up attachment to, you know, how do you call it? This is... used a lot. Here, there's some sections where it's used all the time.
Society,
friendship, and love, yes. You know, so then crossing over that, all these different things, these are the symptoms of that. So it's not about that. Those are secondary. verses 34 to 40. Right, so then we're inspired, but you can get to. Verses 34 to 40. Maharaj Nimi's fifth question, answered by Pipalayana. King Nimi inquired, "Please explain to me the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord Narayana, who is himself the absolute truth and the supersoul of everyone. You can explain this to me because you are most expert in transcendental knowledge." 34. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "Hearing about dedication to Narayana, the king then asked about the form of Narayana." Right, so everything's been about surrendering to Krishna, and so he asked, you know, so then please, what is the transcendental situation of the Lord himself? Right? "Please speak about the Sarup, Nishtam, a Bhagavan called Narayana. Later it will be said, Narayane Turi Yakye Bhagavach Shabda Shabdite. The devotee concentrates on the fourth form, Bhagavan, called Narayana." Oh, Turiya, okay. The transcendental position. Because you have deep sleep, dreaming, awake. These are the states of material consciousness. Beyond that's called Turiya. Where, you know, the one you're awake, but you're still in illusion. So Turiya means where you're awake and not in illusion. You know yourself, the Lord, and the relationship, and you act in that on the transcendental platform. That's called Turiya. He is your deity. You know about his Sarup by meditation, as taught by your guru. But he is also Brahman and Paramatma. I am asking how this one form can also be three. Right, so he wants to know about Narayan, who's beyond all this, his situation, Turiya, but at the same time is, because he's one person, these three features are non-different, but at the same time different. So how is Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma? Sri Pipalayana said, "The Supreme Personality, like you see, is that earlier in the Bhagavatam, the Gita, because someone's looking at the oneness of Krishna, but thinking of it from an impersonal standpoint. Therefore, then, Prabhupada's not speaking of it very kindly." Right?
Yes.
"But as we establish the devotional position and the proper attitude, then we're talking about how Krishna, Brahman, Paramatma, how, you know, everything that's there, his energies, he's non-different. Because what will happen now, then from anything can remind you of Krishna. While from the impersonal, then everything takes you away from Krishna." Right? Does that make sense? Or tries to make you into the Supreme, rather than your serving. Right? So we see is that it goes, it changes. Once the mentality is right, then you can see it in its proper context.
The first point that Srila Prabhupada is doing is to establish Krishna as God.
As the Supreme Lord, yeah. And above all other things. Then once that's there, then you can appreciate how he's established in everything.
Yes.
But at the same time, as even though he is everything, it's still not him as a person.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You have to be able to connect it to him as a person to get that effect of Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
So as we see, those who are advanced in devotional service always absorb, then they can start to see everything can remind them of Krishna. They take advantage of the association of devotees. So then they're situated in this way because for them it all will bring them back to Bhagavan. Does that make sense? But otherwise, if it will distract one into the impersonal, then better not to bring up this point. Sri Pipalayana said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Yet he has no prior cause." Right? So he's the cause of everything, but he has no cause. Because otherwise you say, okay, well, what's his cause? Because in the material world, that's how it works. But the whole point is that's all the way up to Pradhan. Then Pradhan is coming from Krishna. That's where then this logic stops. So it's a mundane logic, right? And so mundaners will use it. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious deep sleep, and also exists beyond them, right? So that's the Turiya. And he's also, I say, pervades wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious. So now if you're Krishna conscious, then all these, you're still Krishna conscious in all these states, because Krishna pervades them. By entering the body of every living being as the supersoul, he enlivens the body, senses, life airs, and mental activities. Otherwise, if he's not there, nothing's going to happen. And thus, all the subtle and gross organs of the body begin their functions. My dear king, know that personality of Godhead to be the supreme. Right? Because we'll say, no, when the jiva leaves the body, then the body stops functioning. But then we'll have to say is we're the one making it work. If we're the one making it work, why doesn't it work the way we want it to work? So that means is where the soul goes, Paramatma goes. So it's actually when the soul leaves, Paramatma goes, that's why the body is not. When the soul enters, then Paramatma, so therefore it's functioning.
There is no example of the soul living in Paramatma state.
No, like that. No, like that. I think Mayavadis. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In answer to this question, first Narayana is described. First of all, the Supreme Lord accepted the form of the eternal first Purusha, full like the moon, for creating the universes from Mahatattva and other elements. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.1. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the following four verses, 36 to 39, the sage describes Brahman. Sri Pipalayana continued, neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life air, or any of the senses are capable of penetrating the supreme truth, any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. But it's not that when you take the spark and put it back in the fire gets... Yeah. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth, since the Vedas themselves disclaim the possibility that the truth can be expressed by words. But, through indirect reference, the Vedic sound does serve as evidence of the supreme truth, since without the existence of that supreme truth, the various restrictions found in the Vedas would have no ultimate purpose. Right? So they can explain about him, but you can't actually explain, because he's beyond that. You know, that was the discussion in the 87th chapter in the 10th canto, is how can this be described if it's, you know, that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, mind cannot make Brahman the object of its thoughts, what to speak of speech or the eyes. The jiva are life airs or senses, just as sparks which arise from parts of the fire cannot reveal the fire. Shruti says, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. Words and mind cannot approach the Lord. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4.1. But Shruti also says, tam twaupanishadam purusham prichami. I ask about the Lord who is the subject of the Upanishads. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. Thus Brahman is indicated through words. Right? Because you can't say the whole thing. You can still, if you say unlimited, the word it says is not unlimited. It only indicates the unlimited aspect of the Lord. Mm-hmm. But the Lord can reveal so that when you hear the word unlimited, you can appreciate that unlimited. Yes. But the words themselves on their own without the chit potency can't do that. Right? Does that make sense? But still, the Veda is the authority on learning about the Lord. But it's when you have that proper and sincere attitude, you're hearing from bona fide spiritual master, then Krishna will reveal to one who studies the Veda. Does that make sense? They say that Brahman, the basis of the self, cannot be expressed by words, since that is what the scriptures say. Statements such as, "This is Brahman," are made, but such designations cannot really define Brahman. For instance, Shruti says, "Know that Brahma, which cannot be expressed by words and by which words arise." It can't be expressed by words, but it's from Brahman that words arise. Right? Narayana Udbhuto Yam Varna Kramaha. All the letters have come from Narayana, but still they can't describe Narayana. But they've come from him. That's why there's a potency that they can actually describe. So when it's powered by the chit potency, that's where it is. So they can carry the chit potency, but it's not that it's actually that it's doing the work. It can carry, just like the pot itself will not cook, but it can be an instrument for the cooking process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, Krishna is not forced to reveal himself.
No, he's not at all.
Even if there is all the elements for the chit potency to come.
Yeah, but if the attitude's not right, then, because Krishna's interested in the attitude, that's why it always says the sincere devotee, the sincere disciple, you know, all the, is because if that's there, that attitude is right, that's what attracts Krishna. So we see is that after giving a little bit of an introduction in the introduction in Gita, the first point he makes is about the attitude.
Yes.
Right, so there it's called the spirit. You know, you catch the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. So if that attitude is appreciated, then you can then Krishna will reveal himself. But otherwise, mechanically, just because you do all the things, it doesn't mean. Right? What's your purpose in doing them? So sadhana becomes bhakti because it's done for Krishna. Otherwise, that same sadhana you can use for so many things. Right? Sadhana, as a principle, is common elements for amongst all the 20 religious processes. Right? So depending on whether you're interested in karma, jnana, or bhakti, much of the principles of sadhana are the same. It's just what you use it for. Now, when it takes on, it has its particular purpose. It'll take on a particular flavor or form to match that goal. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
And from Shraddha to Prema, this particular attitude becomes more and more intense.
The attitude of devotion becomes more intense when you, from Shraddha to Prema, yes. Yes. For instance, that was Katu Upanishad 1.4. Mind cannot measure it, and one cannot see it with the eye. Katu Upanishad 2.3.9. So it just means he's beyond. But he agrees to reveal himself if you follow the process recommended, you know, in the Vedas, and hearing that from the bona fide spiritual master. Then it will work. Though the body of the Lord is spiritual, by the Lord's Kripa Shakti, which is inconceivable, this form becomes visible in the material world. That form is described by words such as blue like the petal of a blue lotus. The Lord's body is the color of a spiritual lotus petal, but is described by the material description of material lotus. However, that spiritual form upon which the devotee meditates, using that material description, becomes visible to the devotee by the inconceivable mercy of the Lord. So, following the scripture, you're trying to apply it in devotion to the Lord, then the Lord reveals himself, even though it is through material words. Right? Because when you have a reflection, it's not that the color changes or anything. Right? It's the same. So therefore, even though he's the color of a spiritual lotus, the material lotus, the blue lotus, will be the same color. Like that? Does that make sense? So that's so then you can compare there. You've all seen blue lotuses, right? Yeah. You just have to keep moving them out of the way. There's just so many of them. It's like in the morning trying to get to Mangal Arati, all these blue lotuses. Yeah. It's like, what's going on? Yeah, what's with that? Isn't that, you know?
Some devotees painting.
Yeah. I heard that they're in Manasarova. To grow there. So, next time you're in Manasarova, make sure you check out the blue lotuses. This is not revealed by the material person's mind and words. It's by the inconceivable potency of the Lord, the Kripa Shakti. When the sadhana of the worshipper of Brahman becomes perfect by the mercy of the Lord becomes realized as Brahman in his mind. It means the transcendental aspect, that Turiya aspect. It doesn't mean he's realized as Brahman and you don't understand the person. Thus the Vedas say, Yan mano na manute. Brahman cannot be understood by the mind. Katu Upanishad. And also, Drishyate Tvagraya Buddhya. Brahman is seen by concentrated intelligence. Katu Upanishad. Right? Because the intelligence is the closest thing to the super soul. Right? So that's why the process is called Buddhi Yoga. Sri Pipalayana continued. That one Brahman shines as Maya with Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, as Sutra, as Mahatattva, as Ahankara, and as powerful energies by taking the form of Devatas, senses, sense objects, and material qualities. That Supreme Brahman is the cause of all the gross effects and all the subtle causes. Footnote 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura signs verses 35 to 37. Bhagavat Arkamrit Shimala, Chapter 4, entitled The Factual Truth of Krishna, Bhagavat Sarupa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So that first point, the aspects of Krishna's Sarup, how he's the supreme, right? Okay. And that asterisk, oh, this asterisk is, oh, means this is Banumars' translation. Okay. Whenever you have that little bracket in that, that means that translation is by Banumars. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Sarupa Brahman is difficult for people to perceive, but it exists without doubt because all material objects are Brahman, since they are product of Brahman. Right? So, pots made out of clay are still clay. Right, so everything that's here expanding from Brahman through his energies is still Brahman. That is described in this verse. That one famous Brahman is the form of Maya Shakti made of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. They call this Pradhana. As Kriya Shakti in Rajas, it becomes Sutra. And as Jnana Shakti, Sattva becomes Mahatattva. Okay. Interesting. That's another form of that. Everything goes in threes. And so all these things have their application here. Remember, I forget what it was. Was it the canto? Was it second canto? Where they were describing all that. You have the Adiatmic, Adidaivic, and Adibhotic. So we just know it in connection with the kleshas. Right? But it was applying it in everything in the creation. So it's the same thing here, is that you take these aspects and you're getting the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, but they have their original. So you have the Jnana, the Kriya, and the how you say, where was it? Oh, that's the previous one. Okay. Maya Shakti, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. So Kriya's Rajas, Sutra. Oh no, it's Kriya in Rajas becomes Sutra, and it's Jnana Shakti, Sattva, and it becomes Mahatattva. They also call this covering on the Jiva known as Aham or Ahankara. This becomes Devatas, Jnana, senses, Kriya, sense objects, Artha, and its products such as material happiness. Right, so then you have the Jnana was the Sattva, the senses were the Kriya, the Rajas, so the objects and Artha, because they're just what you're focusing on, unconscious, right? These powerful energies, by accepting this form, are called Adibhuta, Adiatma, and Adidaiva. Okay, it's just right in the next point. That form from which these powerful energies arise is called Brahman. The gross effect, Sat, and the subtle cause, Asat, are all Brahman. Why? They are Brahman because Brahman is the cause of the Sat and Asat. Does that make sense?
Adi Daiva is the
Devadas.
Can you just
map? Adi Daiva, yeah, it means that if talking in this one.
And Adi Atma is senses in the Kriya, and Adi Bhuta is sense objects of the Artha.
Yeah. Sri Pipalayana continued, right? And so Vishnu Chakravarti is saying, so they know all this technical stuff like that, but then they can talk about the Lord, because it's all the glories of the Lord. It's just how he expands into everything, his unlimited glories. So because they can see that, they can see it in its natural state. Because, you know, it's, what do you call it? Icha Kriya and Jnana, you know, be the source of these ones, and that when they come reflected into the material world, then it takes on these other elements.
Mm-hmm. Right? Now, to appreciate that, we need to have some purification.
Yes. That's why we're studying all this, is hopefully we'll get purified. Because it's the words won't reveal it. It's that we're trying to understand this to please Krishna, then he'll reveal. Sri Pipalayana continued. Brahman, the eternal soul, was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. That spiritual soul is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. Thus, the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere, at all times, and never being destroyed. Just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes manifest as many in contact with various material senses, the one soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with the material body. Yeah, so the life air, there's one prana, but then in the body, when it comes in contact, then it takes on, then you have the five life airs. Technically, there's ten. Right? Because if you say the one, you say it does the one, it has its one that does the other. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if the prana can make things move out, then you also have a prana to make it move in. Otherwise, once you move your hands out, you'd be stuck, right? You know, so that's why then they both.
Prana Maharaj is subtle, but it is material. Prana is spiritual.
Yes, yes. It's material. But the point is, Brahman is prana. That's why it works. Remember in the earlier stages in the Vedanta Sutra, then the discussions were on that. It was on prana, you know, on all these, I can't remember all the different words, but fire, akash, yeah. Ba'ai, yeah, like that, Indra. So Brahman is all this, that's why it works. So therefore, he is the material cause. He is the efficient cause, right? You know, in other words, there's all that we can take part. We can take part in the process. So, if we're worshiping the Supreme Lord through the material elements for material benefits, then it's not called devotion, right? But if you worship the Lord through the material elements, but to please Krishna according to devotion, the recommendations of that's called bhakti. Because it's all the Lord anyway, so anybody who's appreciating anything in the material world is actually worshipping the Lord, but since they don't know it's the Lord, then they don't get the benefit of that, right? Does that make sense? But someone might say, well, what about Agyata Sukriti? But that's a devotee's doing service. And some non-devotee somehow or another contacts that. So it's devotional service, they're engaged, but they don't know that's what it is, they get the benefit. But in all other things that they're dealing with, it's Brahman, unless they understand its connection to Krishna, then they won't get that spiritual benefit. Even though they're dealing with spirit, because everything's spirit. But they're taking their body, their house, their money, everything as material. And so, therefore, it gives that result. Does that make sense? All this jazz? Yes? No? Sri Pipalayana continued. Sri Pipalayana, so we see another way that Satna Sat's being used. Taking the gross effect is sat, the subtle is asat. Because that subtle is changing, and then the other is transformed into something that's there. But at the same time, in other things, you'll take that the subtle is sat and the gross is asat, because the gross is temporary, it will change.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So the point is, just depends upon how you're applying it. And or you can take sat as spiritual and material as asat.
Yes.
So depending upon what you're doing, then that's the way it's...
Yeah. This definition we have come across for the second time, where asat is described as subtle.
As subtle, okay. Sri Pipalayana continued. Brahman, the eternal soul... Oh, no, we just read that one. And we're down...
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates.
Okay, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Realization of Brahman or Tat is not everything. First, one must realize the pure Jiva, or what is known as Tvam. Oh, okay. That is explained in three verses. Atma here means the pure Jiva. This Jiva is not born. The first type of transformation is denied. It has never undergone a transformation to come into being. It will not die. Right, so you don't have to transform. Nothing transforms to get the soul.
Yes.
Right? It's just, yeah. The sixth transformation is denied. Since Jiva is without birth, the transformation of existing after that time, the second transformation is also denied. Because it does not grow, the fourth transformation is called change, is also denied. It does not decay. The fifth transformation is denied. The soul does not undergo these six changes because he sees respective times of passing from boyhood to youth or from deva to human being. Right? So these six transformations means you're born, you grow, you maintain, reproduce or expand or whatever is the particular aspect, then it dwindles and then there's death. So the soul doesn't undergo any of that. It always was there. So that's the meaning. There's no transformation. But it means this. Right? We're not saying that consciousness can't be transformed. So that's what's not understood, as we were reading by the Shankya philosophies. They can't understand. They just know it's not transformed. So then they can't be involved in the material.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This particular statement that you say about tat and tvam, so they are referring to tatvamasi, that particular.
Yeah, it appears so. Unless you know another verse that has tat and tvam in it. Sri Pipalayana continued. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life. Within the material world, some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, some from the seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana or vital air remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive, and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But although the senses, mind, and false ego are inactive, one remembers upon awaking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping. Right? So consciousness is pervading all these things, because Krishna is pervading all of them. Therefore, then one can know these things. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The example of the previous verse is explained, showing the realization of Atma's changeless nature by destruction of the senses. The prana clings to and follows the jiva in species born of eggs, wombs, seas, like holy seas, and perspiration. Yes, seeds, right? This example also shows the changeless nature of that realization. using a simile. The meaning is this. In the waking state, the senses create a sense of change for the Atma. In dream state, the Ahankara remains endowed with impressions. In deep sleep, the senses stop functioning and identity of I, along with Ahankara, disappears. The unchanging Atma, Kutastha, remains. Why? Because it is without covering of the subtle body. Ashayam Rite, because of absence of coverings which cause change. And so at that point he's not affected by these, so we don't see. Right?
Mm. Maharaj, can we say that deep sleep is a full resting because there is no ahankar?
Yes, because otherwise, then because of ahankar, then you have dreams.
Yes.
And that's why it's not, you know, since the ahankara is always a problem, that's why dreams, you don't get good sleep. Right?
Yes, yes.
So it's just all identities that are put together, but because it means you're not fully conscious, how it puts it together is not necessarily in the most ideal way. Right? Yeah.
We do what we can.
Yeah, we do what we can, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Right. So what we see transforming is all the things, the body, the subtle, these things are transforming. The soul is never transforming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? With the destruction of everything up to ahankara, a void alone remains. How does the Atma remain perceptible? We, as the witness of deep sleep, have awareness of happiness devoid of particular knowledge. I slept for that much time happily and did not know anything. In this statement, there is awareness of Atman, deep sleep, because of no memory of non-existence. But because of no relationship with physical objects, the memory is not clear. Footnote 22. This also illustrates that the soul has an experience and hence existence during the state of deep sleep, when the mind, the intelligent, the ahankara, are not functioning. This proves that the soul remains a separate entity even when he is freed from false ego. Right? Because you can remember, because that's that position where you're not affected by the modes of nature. You know, so that's why people, you know, appreciate deep sleep, because it actually is going beyond the modes there. But at the same time, as they're not conscious, unless they're conscious of the Lord, then that state is not going to bring them, it won't bring them to Turiya. Right? But the point being is that the soul, being separated from these things, still remains an individual. That's the point of the discussion. So on the liberated platform, the soul still, when he's freed from the functioning of these modes, is still an individual. Otherwise, these go away, then you would remember, non-existence.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't any non-existence. You don't remember that. There's existence. Just, yes.
This is one of the favorite points of Madhvacharya. In his philosophy, again and again, brings this point. Or soul's separate existence from everything else.
Okay. Yeah, because he uses the term Turiya a lot. I know. Sri Pipalayana continued. When one seriously engages in the devotional service of the personality of Godhead, fixing the Lord's lotus feet within one's heart as the only goal of life, one can destroy the innumerable impure desires lodged within the heart as a result of one's previous fruit of work within the three modes of material nature. When the heart is thus purified, one can directly perceive both the Supreme Lord and oneself as transcendental entities. Thus, one becomes perfect in spiritual understanding through direct experience. Right? So when it's purified, you get that direct experience of the soul and the Lord. Right? By the Lord's revelation. Yeah. Just as one can directly experience the sunshine through normal, healthy vision. Footnote 23. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 38 to 40. To Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 7, entitled The Essential Nature of the Individual Soul, Jiva Tattva, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakura's book. The BBT purport states. Someone said something? Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that in verses 35 through 39, the various stages of standard logic are demonstrated. Verse 35 establishes the Vishaya, or general thesis. Verse 36 manifests Shamshaya, or the expression of doubt. 37 gives Purva Paksha, or opposing argument. And 38 definitely establishes the Siddhanta, or conclusion. 39 presents Sangati, the summary. The Sangati, or final word, is that one should become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship the Lord's lotus feet. Okay. Does that make sense? So these are the verses themselves?
Yes.
They're directly the verses themselves. Okay. So, see, so what's happening here is then the 5 points of logic. So then you have the thesis, right, that we don't have any confusion about. The confusion comes starting with the second one.
Yes.
Right? Because the second one means your hetu, your reasons. It's only with your reasons is there a doubt. Right? I present the reasons, the doubt comes up. Right? So that's why you could call it hetu, you can call it shamshaya. Mm-hmm. Then in the third point, what is the udaharana? Then you're going to explain and give examples. And that's where the other person's argument is going to come up, because you're going to give your examples, they're going to have their arguments, you're going to keep going back and forth like that. Then in the fourth stage, then we have the upanaya, where we're bringing near. So that means you're giving the conclusion. You're bringing all that together so that they can see is that whatever they're looking for, that principal point, is already contained within your point. Right? What you're trying to present and they're trying to present is the same thing, just that the angle that you're taking then very nicely and clearly presents it. Well, there'll be some weakness in their one, right? Then the Sangati means for now where you connect that together and into other aspects so you can see that actually this is what's happening. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So this is then, if you're having discussion where there's opposition to what you're saying, it will take this form. And if you're just making a presentation without that, then you wouldn't use these terms, because you just make your statement, give your reason, give the examples and all that, then clear any doubts that may be there, you bring it there, bring that conclusion like that, and then show how you practically apply it. That's why sometimes if you look in, or much of the time when you look in Prabhupada's purport, where you see that he's using the full logic there, it's not just a note on something, then you'll see is what he opens with and what he closes with are saying the same thing, but what he closes with is making a practical connection to something applicable. Mm-hmm. So it's the thesis being practically applied.
Yes.
Right? So that's why he says, the Sangati is one should become a pure devotee of the Lord. Right?
Yes.
So, we've established the point of devotional service and the position of the jiva.
Yes.
So then, now what? He should apply it as a servant of the Lord. Because otherwise, then, it doesn't get to the practical. It doesn't bring you to actual deliberation, so you don't apply it.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the difference, is that in here, is that depending on how it's applied, you have to have that point where it can be deliberated and applied. Otherwise, then one may tend to just speculate. Because you can't just use these 5 just to have fun speculating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes.
Proving that what we say already contains what the opponent says, and we are presenting much more than that.
Yes.
That will come at fourth stage?
That's in the fourth stage. But that's the point, is that's the Siddhanta. You're bringing theirs, the Upanayan means you're bringing theirs near to yours. You know, and showing that this is the conclusion. So if you're showing it a simple point, then you're just, bring out the Siddhanta. So we'll see there, as they have their the Shamshaya, then the Purva Paksha, then you have the Siddhanta. But you'll see as it goes, at some point, there'll be then the Sangati. So in the argument, then there'll be so many points are being made, like we're discussing about the Shankyites. So they have so many points. So you'll only get to the Sangati once you've cleared all those points. So with each point, then you'll bring it to Siddhanta. But at some point, you'll take it into the Sangati. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well, the Sangati is always more or less the same to become a devotee of Krishna.
That's there, but it's just the different angles that is what the presentation is, which particular position that is being presented. Because it's all about Krishna, but there's unlimited aspects. You know, there'll be major aspects that we work with. It'll be there. But the Sangati also, it then brings out the aspect that it connects to, the whole verses connects together. Then that verse connects to the previous one, connects to the next one. Those verses connect to the whole point of the chapter. The chapter connects to whatever is the bigger thing. You know, it's like we have cantos, chapters, verses, you know, to the next thing. That connects to the whatever is the main thing. It connects to the actual purpose of the whole work. This work connects to other works. Like you see, as we're going through this, say, and was it Pipalaina or the previous one who was?
Prabuddha.
Was saying it was almost like exactly a Bhagavad Gita shloka. So that's the whole point. Sangati does that and shows all the connections. That's why we're bringing in from so many different places. So you can start to see the Sangati.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So,
Maharaj, yeah. Your Sangati will be, as you mentioned, application, but it will be same as the Vishaya.
It's the same as the Vishaya, but it's the application of the Vishaya. That's all. See, you can technically just present the Vishaya at the end again.
Yes.
You know. But what we see is that the it's a natural presentation where then they'll take it to a practical application. Because once something's practical, then you can see a context, then you're inspired to use it. If it's just theory, then there's no inspiration. But the context of practical application, that makes it of value. So then the person will have understood it.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Yes. So these 5 points, right? So then, according to what is here, right? Sri Pipalayana said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Yet he has no prior cause. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious deep sleep, and also exists beyond them. By entering the body of every living being as the supersoul, he enlivens the body, senses, life, airs, and mental activities, and thus all the subtle and gross organs of the body begin their function. My dear King, know that Personality of Godhead to be the Supreme." So, that's the Vishaya. So, then, neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life, air, or any of the senses are capable of penetrating that supreme truth, any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth. Since the Vedas themselves disclaim the possibility that the truth can be expressed by words, but through indirect reference, the Vedic sound does serve as evidence of the supreme truth. Since, without the existence of that supreme truth, the various restrictions found in the Vedas would have no ultimate purpose. Right? So, you know, doubts come up. How can he be known? Right? So then, originally one, the absolute Brahman, comes to be known as threefold, manifesting itself as the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Brahman further expands its potency, and thus the power to act and the power of consciousness become manifest, along with the false ego, which covers the identity of the living entity. Right? So you have consciousness, you have the power to act, and you have the false ego. So these would be further extensions of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? Which covers the identity of the conditioned soul. Thus, by the expansion of the multipotencies of the absolute, the demigods, as the embodiment of knowledge, become manifest, along with the material senses, their objects, and the results of material activity, namely happiness and distress. In this way, the manifestation of the material world takes place as the subtle cause, and as a material effect visible in the appearance of gross material objects. Brahman, which is the source of all subtle and gross manifestations, is simultaneously transcendental to them, being absolute. Right, so that presents this point. Right, but here is that we're even presenting our own points.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's not that it has to be, but it's points that people would be arguing against. Like someone probably say, some may say, mm-hmm. And so then you bring up. So it's here. Brahman, the eternal soul, was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. That spiritual soul is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. Thus the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times and never being destroyed, just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes manifest as many in contact with the various material senses. The one soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with the material body. So that will be then, we'll bring about that conclusion. So that brings, you know, what is actually the position. So Siddhanta here will then be pointing out that what is the actual position, you know, clearing the doubt. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, others from the seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana, or vital air, remains unchanged and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive, and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But although the senses and mind and false ego are inactive, one remembers upon awaking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping. Right? And so, then, we go back. The Supreme Personality of God is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Yet he has no prior cause. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious deep sleep, and also exists beyond them. By entering the body of every living being as the supersoul, he enlivens the body's senses, life airs, and mental activities, and thus all the subtle and gross organs of the body begin their functions. My dear King, know that personality of Godhead to be the Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you see is that here it is that the living entity then can be engaged, but the point is this is engaged in the service of the Lord. Right? But that's that opening point. No?
Which means there is some activity there in the Sangati.
Yes. That is, but it's still in that position.
See,
means means we have the root of the various stages of standard logic, you know, so the Panchanga Nyaya. So, just trying to understand those five, then let alone all the other aspects of it. Because if we're saying that these all logic is connected to these five, that means all the other aspects, all the other padas are connected to that. Right, so I think there's, how many are there? 16 different aspects of logic. So they're all being presented through the use of these five. And so, like that, you can get so many different aspects in this and that. Does that make sense? And then how you're going to apply this, depending on how you're, how you're discussing, how others are doing, how you're going, the conversation.
Interchangeable in a sense?
They're not interchangeable. It's that when, it's like when you say Siddhanta, then you're using Purvapaksha and Shamshaya. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're using, what is it? Upanaya, then using Udaharana and Hetu.
Yes.
And then you use Nigamana also.
Yeah, and then you use Nigama as here. Does that make sense? So the point is that it's just that depending upon how you're applying it, then it gets different names. Right? You're... You're talking about, let's say, you're looking at it from the position in the family, then you'll use the term children, right? Let's say experienced grihasthas are talking about the children, they may use other terms that, how you say, because of their affection and all that, but it also has the other aspects of what they do in that, like they call them rug rats or ankle biters or, you know, things like that. Does that make sense? But it's the same thing, but you're taking a different, slightly aspect of it. So all these different terms are so one can appreciate the various aspects. Does that make sense?
It's taking to one set.
No, but the point is you have the one set, that's what Gotama is given. But then when you apply it, that may take that form, you may need to use this other aspect. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so all those are so when you're talking about Sangati, then it'll have all those aspects of how it connects and that, because I think there's six aspects of Sangati. Right? To make sure it's all connected everywhere. So, you know, if you're taking one thing that does that, it's like Sambandhavide and Prayojana. It has all that, but then we're seeing here where we're studying it as goodness, passion, and ignorance. You know, and other times, then we were going into the, what do you call it, Adhyatmik, Adhidaivik, Adhibhote. So these are all just different ways that you're applying Sambandhavide and Prayojana. Does that make sense? So you always have that Vastutraya, then it has many ways to apply it. Right. So it's just getting used to these, because you see the acharyas then in their commentaries, then they were bringing out all the fine details and all these things like that, because for them, you know, they don't have, what do you call it, they don't have all these, what was the word, innumerable impure desires lodged within the heart as a result of one's previous fruit of work within the three modes of nature. So since they don't have that, then they see very clearly. So it's just a matter of, we try to see, understand this in connection with Krishna consciousness, and Krishna, through his Kripa Shakti, then we can understand. Because whatever it is, this conversation has gone way farther than when we first started dealing with this.
As soon as you think you
understood, then they start.
Isn't
that the way everything is? Yes. Yeah. Between Siddhanta and Sangati. Siddhanta and Sangati. Sometimes, like, while expressing, we put Siddhanta in the content, Siddhanta more, and then Sangati we will give in a short format, but sometimes,
it depends upon what's important. But the main point is Siddhanta is going to give the correct understanding of any doubts. So whether you're taking that, because that ends the point there, whether you need to be taking it further, then that's another.
Right. Hmm? Okay. So, actually, there is only mainly two Gotama and Vyasa Panchanganyaya, only two types, more or less, no?
Basically. It just means that it's the various syllogisms themselves, but then in application of it, that where you're dealing with doubts, you know, like that, that are being presented, then you'll have these other aspects. Because in other words, the Shamshaya will be the other person's Vishaya.
Yes.
So it gets shifted one.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can't be saying your Vishaya and they're saying their Shamshaya at the same time.
Yes.
Because they might not match, you know. You're saying like that.
In Vedanta Sutra, it's mainly Vyasadeva.
Means it's because you're trying to defeat all these other philosophies. So the Vishaya has been made, but then their Shamshaya will immediately come up. And so then you have, and then they'll give their whole, in other words, the Apurva Paksha is their Udaharana.
Yes, yes.
Like that. And then clearing that Upanayana, that will just do that as Siddhanta. Because you understand these parts, so therefore you don't have to go down and break down each one. You know that that's what's happening. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're driving, so you should, you're going, and then you say you should shift gears.
Yes.
But we haven't set up, down, to what number, what you're on. It's just because you know what's going on, then you know you're speeding up, so that means shift up. If you're slowing down, it means shift down. Like that. So you have that understanding. So when you understand these, then in the application, then you don't have to give, you know, so many aspects. Because it's just working within this. So we do that. But the Sanghati is always there. Like you see, they're always connecting that point to another, to the Upanishads. So that's the Sanghati aspect. So when they're establishing the Siddhanta, they'll use the Sanghati. That makes sense. Just like the Hetu, the Vishaya, you know, I mean the Pratigya and the Hetu, then you can put that together.
Yes.
You'll make your point and make your reasons.
Yes.
So it'll appear as one thing, but it's actually two.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And the Vedanta Sutra is in this particular format of Vishesha, Mishaya, Purupaksha and the Siddhanta.
Yes.
And the Sanghati is not being highlighted.
Because we haven't cleared all the doubts.
So that is going to come towards the end of the path?
Or at the end of the Vedanta Sutra,
yes.
Or like that. The point is that, but you see, is they're doing Sanghati all along, showing the connection with other literatures and stuff like that. So they're showing that, you know, not only we're saying that, but the Upanishad says this, and this Upanishad, and that Upanishad, and it's like that. So that's the Sanghati aspect.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Then, verses 41 to 45, Maharaj Nimi's sixth question answered by Adihotra. King Nimi said, oh great, so we see it's just in his presentation, he uses that logic. That's the standard. King Nimi said, oh great sages, please speak to us about the process of karma yoga. Purified by this process of dedicating one's practical work to the Supreme, a person can very quickly free himself from all material activities, even in this life, and thus enjoy pure life on the transcendental platform. Once in the past, in the presence of my father, Maharaj Ikshvaku, I placed a similar question before four great sages, who are sons of Lord Brahma, but they did not answer my question. Please explain the reason for this. 41 to 42, the BBT purport states, Srila Madhvacharya has quoted a verse from the Tantra Bhagavata, stating that the reason the four sons of Lord Brahma, although Mahajanas and experts in the science of devotional service, declined to answer King Nimi, was that they wanted to demonstrate clearly that even those who are expert in the cultivation of speculative knowledge cannot understand the actual science of pure devotional service. Srila Jiva Goswami has further commented that the sages avoided answering the question from the king because at that time King Nimi was a young boy and therefore not mature enough to understand the answer fully. So then they had both these aspects come out.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it shows through speculation, you can't know these only through devotion.
Yes.
And at the same time, they're not going to get into the fineness because as a child at that point, he wouldn't have understood the answer anyway.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so therefore, then it's going to come up because he wants to know he's sincere, Krishna will arrange. So then now the Navayogendras came.
Yes.
And now the Navayogendras will answer. Sri Avihotra replied, prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties, and forbidden activities are topics one can properly understand through authorized study of the Vedic literature. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. So it has to be accepted from the scriptures. Otherwise, it won't make sense, because you'll read it, and depending upon the presentation and the context in which it is, you may think it doesn't make sense. But we have to remember is if we're using our own measurement to judge things, then the four defects are there in our measurement.
Yes.
So that's why we have to accept the scriptures. So that then establishes what should be done. Does that make sense? And let alone if you're using as a measurement something that you picked up from the internet, from, as was pointed out before, who was talking about the great materialists? Remember we were talking about that, glorifying the great materialists? So we pick it up from the great materialists and then try to take those opinions and by that then judge the scriptures, devotional service, and devotees, then there'll be no fruit from such endeavor. Thorns maybe, but fruit, no. Like that. And if it is fruit, it'll have thorns, so then it's known as a durian, so it's stinky. Yes. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Premananda ki.